The only thing about that song is knowing when to stop, isn't it? But hopefully we didn't sort of outstay our welcome and also didn't foreshorten it. But if you were caught up wanting to do more, well, you can find it on YouTube and sing along there. So. We continue today on our theme of being blessed to be a blessing. And as we learn what it is to be a blessing, as you'll know if you've been with us the past couple of weeks, we are using the acronym of BLESS, B-L-E-S-S, where B stands for begin with prayer, which I looked at a couple of weeks ago. L stands for listen to bless, which John led you in last Sunday. And today we're looking at eat to bless. And then next week will be serve to bless, and the following week stories to bless. So today, eat to bless. Now, of course, in one sense, eating is a necessity, isn't it, as well as a blessing. For those of you who are familiar with such things, in Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, eating is one of our basic physiological needs that is essential before our needs for safety and belonging and esteem and self-actualization. That's posh, isn't it? But I interpret that as reaching our potential. Our need to reach our potential can be met. But eating can also be so much more than just necessity. When we eat, we experience God's blessing, I believe. It is the answer to our prayer, Lord, give us this day, give us today our daily bread when we eat. And so we experience God's blessing, and we can also share God's blessing when we eat. Many of us here will start meals by saying grace, asking God's blessing on the food with which he has blessed us. When we eat with others, giving and receiving hospitality, it opens the door, I believe, to many other things. Do you ever wish that you could travel in time? I mean, I do. And sometimes we'd like to go back and change something, wouldn't we? Or we'd like to go forward and take a look at something that's going to happen. I would like to go forwards to tomorrow morning when I am going to an event hosted by Central Baptist Association with Hayley Young, president of the Baptist Union for the current year. Because Hayley, for her presidential year, has chosen as her theme, building a bigger table. I'd like to travel forward in time by 24 hours and then travel back to now, because I think that what she has to say could be really useful to this sermon. But it's just too bad, isn't it? But maybe there'll be stuff to add. But from what I've read of her theme for the year, I believe one aspect of what she will say is about Jesus' table ministry. And Jesus, you probably know this already, Jesus is constantly depicted having meals with people. In fact, 10 times in Luke's gospel, Jesus eats with people and he blesses them as he does in a variety of different ways. Eating with people for Jesus is a way of letting them know that they are seen and heard and known and respected. In Luke chapter 9, Jesus hosts a huge picnic. Metaphorically, Jesus is building a bigger table. Perhaps this, at that stage, is the biggest picnic that there has ever been. At the beginning of the chapter, though, just to give a bit of context, he has sent out the 12 disciples on a mission to deliver people, to heal them, to proclaim the kingdom of God. And Jesus gives them power and authority to do these things that he also has been doing. And they go from village to village doing as he told them and seeing, really seeing him do remarkable things through them. Good news tends to travel. And just as the disciples get back to Jesus and get away with Jesus to get some rest, crowds find him again. And he carries on the work that he has shared with the disciples, healing and proclaiming. Probably the disciples are desperate for a rest. We don't know how long they were away for on mission. But after the exhilaration of being Jesus' ambassadors, exhaustion eventually must kick in. Send away the crowd, they say to Jesus, to find food and lodgings. Quite sensibly, perhaps expecting Jesus to agree. But they can hardly have expected his next words. You give them something to eat. You what? They may have replied. You give them something to eat, I hear Jesus repeat. And they do a quick recce of resources. But we've only got 5 loaves and 2 fish, they say. And that's meant for us. They probably didn't say, but may well have thought. Then a burst of inspiration. Unless we go and buy food for all this crowd. But it's at this point that Luke reveals the size of the task, telling us about 5,000 men were there. And you'll probably know that there was a tendency just to record the number of men. I know it was a different age, wasn't it? And that we need to add women and a fair few children onto that. So it could have been a very, very significantly bigger crowd than the 5,000 men that Luke mentioned. And these disciples, they could never afford to feed so many. Their faith has been built up on the mission they've been on, but they're not ready to believe that their 5 loaves and 2 fish can feed this huge crowd. I'm not sure I'd be ready to believe either, would you? But hear this. Jesus works with the faith that we have, not the faith that we haven't. And he asks the disciples to do 3 things that they have, we find, got faith to do. Fairly simple things, we might think. Firstly, he says, well, divide the crowd into groups of 50. Which would have made it easier for them to count the numbers that were actually there, and Luke perhaps to get the reports of the same. So that was the first thing, divide the crowd. Then distribute the food, little though it seems. And Jesus blesses the food, doesn't he? He gives thanks for it. He gives it to them to take to the people. And then one final job for which they have faith, which might have seemed to be the easiest one of all, the easiest task of all, to gather up the leftovers. And there's no doubt, as we follow this story, that the crowd are blessed. For Luke says they all ate and were satisfied. 5 loaves, 2 fish. Now, I suspect that the way to build a bigger table where more and more people experience God's kingdom hospitality is to eat with people around lots of smaller tables. I was thinking in my mind, how big might be a table that would seat 5,000, maybe 25,000 people with the women and children? And it got a bit silly, really. I mean, if you want to do the maths and work out the space that's needed and maybe a big round table or just a really long table, it is going to be massive, isn't it? Big round table, as I thought about it, wouldn't be much use because how would you reach the food in the middle? You know, it just wouldn't help, would it? So that was a sensible thing to do, to divide into groups of 50, about the same maybe as we have amongst us this morning. Working together, we might eat and get to know groups of 50 or so. Sheila, you and your team feed more than that at the community lunch every Tuesday, don't you? But it is broken down. But imagine doing 5,000 plus, plus, plus. But break it down and you can see that it's possible. Katie and Shirley, you may sometimes come close to that sort of number of 50 at our cameo lunches. And there are other lunches going on in other places. And we may get there when we have quiz nights and the like with food. But at an individual level, we have to do what we can, not what we can't. And that's okay. Not long after we moved our Sunday services into this space, which, as I said a couple of weeks ago, is now 7 years ago, how time flies, Wendy and I hosted a welcome lunch in our home just over there for about 30 newcomers, plus those of us that were there helping, so it was perhaps 35, from what I remember, 35 of us. That was fun. Unfortunately, we're blessed with a house to live in that has plenty of space. But mostly, practically, for you and for me, it's going to be less than that. And only on this one occasion in Luke's Gospel does Jesus eat with thousands. But there are nine other times in Luke that he shares meals with people, hosted by them and hosted by him. Sometimes the gathering's quite large, like the banquet held in Jesus' honour by Levi. Sometimes it's quite small, like what seems to have been more of a family meal at a place that Jesus came to frequent quite often, with Mary and Martha, and presumably their brother Lazarus. On each of these occasions, I believe his companions are blessed. Each of these meals tells us something about what it means to give and to receive hospitality. Very briefly, otherwise we'd be here all day, I want just to mention the nine other meals. In Luke, just checking the time, in Luke chapter 4, verses 38 and 39, Jesus heals Simon Peter's mother-in-law of a fever. And she gets up at once and begins to wait on them. At first glance, that seems a little bit self-serving, doesn't it? Oh, you're ill. I'll make you well. Then you can serve us. But of course, we serve others. Well, Jesus serves her by healing her. And also, I believe, we serve others by allowing them to serve us. Sometimes it's not just giving hospitality by which we serve others, but by receiving it. I think back what is now a very long time, really, almost 20 years ago when I made a sabbatical visit to Nepal. I'd been there 10 years before that as well, when my parents lived there for a couple of years. But on a number of occasions, I and my companion were given hospitality by people who could ill afford to give it. I remember one particular place in the town of Butwal, which is a kind of lower-lying, hotter place in Nepal, where we went for lunch with the pastor of the local church and his wife. And the wife served us with, I have to say, a very scrawny looking chicken with little meat, the type that would not even reach the shelves in Tesco's or other supermarkets. But actually for them, it was far more than they would eat. It was far more than they would buy for themselves on normal occasions. And they served it to us. And in fact, sadly, I kind of think, but it's cultural, the wife just served it. She didn't sit down and eat with us. And we got the sense that actually she would have what was left, if anything was left, at the end of the meal. And yet they counted it a great blessing to have us meet with them. And we helped give that blessing by being willing to be there to receive their hospitality. There are times like that, aren't there? Times, I mean, that was a delight, that occasion. But maybe there were one or two other times, meals I've been invited to that weren't quite such a delight, and it would have been easy to say no, but missed out on the opportunity to be a blessing by receiving what others want to give. So that's Jesus healing Simon's mother-in-law. In Luke chapter 5, verses 27 to 32, Jesus calls Levi, who is otherwise known as Matthew in Matthew's Gospel, to follow him. And Levi does. And in the aftermath of that, Levi not only follows Jesus, becoming a disciple of Jesus, but he throws a great banquet for Jesus at his home, inviting a large crowd of other tax collectors and it tends to be always bracketed in this way, other tax collectors and sinners. You see, that's how tax collectors were regarded, and they were perhaps not the lowest of the low, but they were not liked, and we kind of referred to Zacchaeus the other week. Not liked, certainly not loved. And Jesus experienced criticism for doing that. I wonder if you have ever experienced criticism for the company that you keep. But what Jesus offered by going, by accepting the invitation, was friendship. He offered friendship to this Levi that he had called, to the friends that Levi wanted him to meet, well knowing the criticism that would come from the holier-than-thou brigade, the Pharisees. We offer friendship as we participate, as we eat with others, to bless. It breaks down barriers, doesn't it, when we eat with someone over a meal. We might meet with someone for the very first time, and over the companionship of a meal, we get to know each other. I wonder how many of us here went on a first date with our beloved over a meal. Tell me later. Then we move to Luke chapter 7, 36 to 50. Here, Jesus eats at the home of Simon the Pharisee, who in contrast to Levi, probably regards himself as righteous. And as they are eating, an unnamed woman who had, quotes, lived a sinful life, probably a euphemism for a woman who, if not a prostitute, slept around, which in her day and age was certainly tantamount to the same thing. She came in and starts weeping. She starts washing Jesus' feet with her tears. She kisses them and pours on perfume. Again, we maybe put ourselves in that situation. Would be a bit of a surprise, wouldn't it, if that happened in our homes. But this was probably a meal in an outside courtyard that people could get into rather than a meal behind locked doors or at least closed doors. Would be a surprise. What would we do? Would we recoil? Would we push said person away because they don't fit with our kind of idea as to those that might get close to Jesus, might be allowed to get close to Jesus? But he doesn't do that. And he kind of reads Simon's thoughts. And he tells him a story about two debtors, one with a large debt, one with a small debt, which, having been forgiven, will have the greatest love for the one that has released them from the debt. And he says, I suppose the one who's been released the bigger debt. And Jesus says, so it is with this woman. Over a meal, probably not a meal, admittedly, that the woman herself was eating, Jesus gives forgiveness. I can think of, if I give illustrations here, none of them are from this church, okay? But I can think of a previous church where Wendy and I got two couples together over a meal to try and do some reconciliation. It's kind of hard to eat together without talking to one another. And there was quite a big fallout. And by bringing them together for a meal, I wouldn't say everything was hunky-dory after that, but progress was made as we just tried to open the lines of communication between these two couples that had fallen out in a way that almost brought the two men of the couples to blows with each other, I kid you not. Forgiveness. We heard the story in Luke 10 of Martha opening her home to Jesus, but of course she takes umbrage, doesn't she, when her sister Mary doesn't help with the preparations for the meal. I sometimes feel that Martha was a bit hard done by, but you know, we kind of go with what Jesus says, don't we? And I think actually that in the moment, Mary's way was the better way. Martha's way wasn't a wrong way. And Jesus doesn't say her way is wrong, but he kind of lets her down gently, doesn't he? And says that Mary's sitting in his presence is better. And perhaps Martha might also initially have chosen that way. I think Jesus shows grace in that particular instance. Grace to Martha. And as you will know, if you know the story of Mary and Martha, he will subsequently go back to Mary and Martha when their brother Lazarus has died. And Martha there shows great faith in knowing that we will rise again on the resurrection day. Then Luke 14, 1-24, and again, Jesus is eating at the house of a prominent Pharisee, and he observes how guests pick places of honour. They sit as close to the host as they can, and Jesus instead encourages them to take the lowest of places, so that rather than being demoted down the table by their host, they might be promoted. And he tells the parable of the great banquet and suggests that the invited, or those that think they're invited, may be excluded from God's heavenly banquet, whilst the uninvited can be included. Over a meal, Jesus says the unexpected. He challenges the preconceptions of his host. Oh, that could be a bit awkward, couldn't it? If you go to dinner with someone and challenge them. But again, perhaps eating with other people, breaking down barriers, can be a time when we do share our hearts. In Luke 19, 1-10, Jesus invites himself to the home of Zacchaeus, another tax collector and sinner. We looked at that in much greater detail on our church weekend back in October. And despite the muttering of the crowd, Jesus still goes. He undoubtedly hears the crowd, but he doesn't kind of change his plans as a, dare I say, a politician might change their plans at criticism and try and withdraw from a position that they are taking. Jesus just carries on and goes, and he receives the welcome that Zacchaeus gives to him gladly. And in eating with such a person, Jesus shows acceptance, doesn't he, to Zacchaeus. He is accepting Zacchaeus the person, not necessarily the behaviour, the way that Zacchaeus behaves, but he accepts him as a person. He affirms him. He gives him, if you like, that esteem that is stage 4 on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. An acceptance that Zacchaeus so desperately needs. Then the 7th occasion when Jesus eats is one that we think about often. In fact, we're even a part of often in Luke 22, verse 7, and the following verses. When Jesus wants to explain to his disciples what his forthcoming death is all about, he doesn't give them a theory, but he hosts a meal and invests the Passover elements of bread and wine with a new significance. This is my body broken for you. This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. Over a meal, Jesus speaks of sacrifice. Number 8, John was looking at last week in Luke 24, verse 28-35. The road to Emmaus. And after walking with two followers on the road to Emmaus, listening to them and explaining the scriptures, they invite him in for a meal. And as he breaks bread, finally, they recognize him just as he disappears from their sight. Not for long, as you will know. But in that moment, they receive enlightenment, don't they? Enlightenment through being with Jesus. Enlightenment through seeing him do the familiar thing as he sits down to share a meal. Seems that the meal isn't completed at that point, but in the verses straight after, they go off to find the rest of the disciples. And as they are there, Jesus appears among all the disciples, minus Judas, of course, sharing peace and eating fish. He teaches them and sends them into the world with the good news in the power of the Holy Spirit. At that meal, Jesus through Luke gives them a commission to be a blessing, to go and to bless others. So remember that Jesus works with the faith that we have, not that we haven't. And different things that come through hospitality given and received is that we serve others, we offer friendship, we give and receive forgiveness. We administer grace. We may expect the unexpected. We accept those that we meet with. We may find sacrifice in those meals. There can be enlightenment as we converse with one another and learn more about one another. And maybe as we share hospitality, maybe we find that this is our thing. This is a way in which we can bless others and be blessed. So remember, Jesus works with the faith that we have, not that we haven't. And yet by stepping out in faith, I believe our faith will increase. And I want to encourage you to eat to bless. Maybe you're not a great cook and even the baked beans stick to the bottom of the saucepan when you cook them. Well, you could invite someone round and get in a takeaway. Let someone else burn it. Well, hopefully not, but let someone else cook it and you enjoy it with somebody. Perhaps you're not comfortable inviting people into your home. How about taking someone out for a meal or for a coffee? Or bringing them to Cameo or the community lunch. Or bring them along to the Alpha course. As I said earlier, there's still time. So there are different ways of eating to bless, different ways of showing hospitality. Let me take us back, as I close, to the miraculous feeding of 5,000 plus people. The 12 are sent out initially by Jesus and they do marvelous things, and it prompts even Herod to ask, "Who is it I hear such things about?" The 12 tell Jesus to send the crowd away for food, but Jesus challenges them to be the answer. And so they do the three things that their faith allows. And the third one of those things, after everyone has eaten their fill, the 12 collect up 12 baskets of leftovers. Let's just pause on that for a moment. The 12 collect up 12 baskets of leftovers. And one can sort of imagine perhaps them coming from the crowds. It's quite a long way to go, isn't it? This giant crowd. They're collecting up all the scraps that there are from amongst the people who have eaten their fill and are all satisfied. And they bring their basket back one by one. And maybe the one who has a full basket thinks, "I must have collected most of it up." But then another basket arrives, then another full basket, then another, until finally all 12 bring the baskets back to Jesus. At the very least, it seems to be at least twice the amount of food that they started with in the first place. It may have been significantly more than that, depending on the size of the basket. But I want to say, when God blesses, he does so abundantly. Amen. Does so abundantly. Who knows what he might do as you step out in faith to bless others. But the thing is, you will only know if you step out in faith. After they've collected the leftovers, we find Jesus asking, well, kind of the same that Herod had been asking. Except Herod has asked, who is this that does these things? And Jesus asks the disciples, who do you say does these things? Who do you say that I am? And Peter answers, God's Messiah. God's Messiah. We are blessed to eat. Let us also eat to bless others so that they know the Messiah, Jesus. Be blessed. Be a blessing.